When you make me feel good, it's just like some scientist rewarding a laboratory mouse. Now, I was still almost completely paralyzed, but my hand was free enough to do the drills they wanted. I rapidly tapped my right forefinger on the table screen, hard as I could. No. 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 For the first time I felt I had some sense of control. Suddenly my mouth became paralyzed. That didn't stop my brain though. If I could hear them telepathically, maybe they could hear me as well. No. 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 I continued to tap my finger emphatically on the table screen. Suddenly, in my field of vision, two of the creatures I'd seen before scurried in. I got a fuzzy, blurry impression of them at first, and I knew they didn't like what I was doing. They were about to use screen imaging, which is something like Shapeshift 34-ing, but I just kept at it. Then those blurry images changed and sharpened, and abruptly started looking like two policemen. Then another blurry change and they became two military soldiers. I could see what was up, and it didn't get to me. Sorry. I yelled inside my head. You're not frightening me. That's not going to stop me. I was just whistling in the dark. I was dead frightened. Still, I knew instinctively that I would hang on to this consciously by putting up a great big stink with my will. They changed back into their previous big head, skinny elfish bodies again. Hey, I thought to myself, these guys can be distracted. I continued my finger banging. I almost felt triumphant, for about a second or two. Then a wrenching sensation passed through my whole body. It particularly throbbed through the right side of my gut with deeply reverberating pain and anxiety. I felt a distinct tingling in the right side of my head, and I felt a presence just out of sight, a powerful, significant presence. It was very strong. I'm not sure why, but I had the feeling that it was a male presence. For some reason, I think of most of the visitors as being male. I stopped my ruckus. The energy radiating from this being was so strong that I can't really find the words to describe it. Overpowering? Overbearing? All this and more. I guess the nearest comparison I could make would be if I was strapped in a chair while some Tyrannosaurus Rex was sniffing me, thinking about whether it was hungry or not. I could sense this being leaning down. I could feel its head no more than 3 inches from mine. I couldn't quite make him out directly, but I got the suggestion of an outline of a face and a taller body. 35, the keepers. When this learning machine perceived that I was proficient at tracing the symbols for the letters A and B, the word good appeared on the wall screen. Just like a lab rat, I knew it was time for my reward. Then, on the wall screen the word lust appeared, with the alien symbol for the letter A beside it. Just to the right of lust appeared power and the symbol for the letter B. Okay, I thought. If I write down the letter A, I get some kind of reward that has to do with lust. I write down the B, I get a reward associated with power. Again, I just wanted to get all this over with. But the notion of pleasurable rewards was a sight better than the pain part. I sketched out the alien symbol for A. Instantly, floating before me, appeared a full-sized hologram of a beautiful, dark-haired woman. Bizarre, I thought. On the wall screen the word faster appeared. I drew the symbol again, faster. The hologram moved and the woman began to teasingly disrobe. This was the reward session, and I sensed that I could fulfill any fantasy. The woman was beautiful, and my manhood wanted more. I couldn't give in to this. I couldn't let them have anything on me. No, I said. I don't want anything to do with this anymore. The hologram disappeared. I thought it odd that they should honor my demand on the pleasure part. Then, I heard that low-pitched whirling sound again, spinning faster and faster. The pitch slowly got higher, and the whirling sound began spinning. My heart began to race. Thus, was I taken home. I had the desolate feeling that I would return to that dreadful place again soon. There were so many letters yet to learn. Chapter 5, Life Falls Apart. The lesson continued there in that twilight world, in that screen room of strange beings. It could have been on some ship, some distant planet dimension. Or in an abandoned warehouse in Brooklyn, for all I could tell. I learned, I suffered, and I was rewarded. time after time in that strange and foreign place, my mind was mauled by pure alienness. It seemed a continuum, a permanent time-space platform. It seemed as though time stood still in that place. Perhaps it did. Generally it was warm and humid there, although at times weird, cool air would filter in from somewhere. The aliens experimented with emotions, and it seemed there were other things about humans that particularly interested them, things like individualism, war and uniforms. I always gave them their money's worth in those early years when it came to emotions. In real life, though, things started falling apart. I was an emotional mess. All the things that keep a normal life functioning, friends, family, business, and personal life, began to disintegrate. People began to suggest to me that I seemed to be having some sort of psychological difficulty. I knew that already, they just didn't know why. In mid-March 1989, the strain was too much. I was on the verge of losing my mind, and I felt like a pressure relief valve about to blow. Should I confess to Teresa? I was still con 39, 38, the keeper's life falls apart, concerned that it would frighten her and maybe wedge something between us. I knew nothing about people like Bud Hopkins, or alien abduction support groups at that time. You would think I'd go to a library and research. All I can say was that I just didn't realize that other people could be like me. I just wasn't media connected, and besides, I guess I just wasn't thinking straight. Several years prior to 1988, I did charity work for a local church. Though I'm not much of a church person, I had enjoyed helping the sick, poor and old people in my spare time. I respected the pastor of that church, whom I'll call Reverend Ed. He seemed to be an intelligent, wise person, with advanced college degrees. I'd never asked him for anything before, except to have him marry Teresa and me. But I called him. I told him I needed help with a strange problem. "What do you mean by strange?" he asked. "I'm having experiences with strange beings. They're forcing me to learn some kind of alien language." I gave a few more details and he listened patiently. "Well, Jim," Reverend Ed said, "judging from what you're telling me, if it's okay with you, I would like to bring someone else along who perhaps would be more qualified to consult with on this matter." I'm not sure if I felt better after my call to the pastor, but I felt I was doing something positive. I almost wished I was crazy at the time, so I could get treatment from a doctor. Maybe that's where the pastor and his friend would direct me. I probably should have headed straight to a shrink, but as I said, I wasn't the most rational of individuals at that time. Besides, the core of me knew the truth. The core of me was quite sane, and it was that part that was clinging to the memories of my experiences. They were reality. They were happening. I wasn't crazy. Pulled was the word I started to use with myself to describe the transition between here and there. The previous night I'd been pulled into the alien school experience. I'd just called Reverend Ed, and I was feeling slightly relieved, but I was still exhausted. Doing the real estate work I needed to do seemed impossible. I was just sitting in my easy chair in the living room just trying to grab a spot of safety amidst this whole mess. All at once I felt as if I was surrounded by a field of static electricity. I looked around, stunned. Dust balls and lint were sticking to my skin. I started to wipe them off, when I caught a whiff of a foul smell, sort of like rotting eggs or sulfur. Then, out of nowhere, three marble-sized balls of green phosphorus light materialized. They hovered 5 feet in front of me, right over my coffee table. They formed into a triangle, and in the midst of this triangle a projection flashed into existence. An owl, a perched owl, stared at me with hooded eyes. "Leave me alone," I cried. I was never excited about the prospect of school, especially so soon after the last episode. But in the afternoon, the owl disappeared. From the corner of my eye I caught a glimpse of two figures. When I turned my head to face them, nothing was there. Then I heard what sounded like footsteps coming from my attic. "Why can't you leave me alone?" I cried. I still felt electrically charged. I jumped up with anger, and some knick-knacks flew from the coffee table. I seemed to be charged with some kind of an electromagnetic force. Okay, I thought, amidst my alarm, comic book times. Yes, I was still thinking sarcastically from time to time. But truly, from the very earliest stages of my abductions there were side effects involved. I now call the electromagnetic stuff and its ilk all part of the residual effect. There always seemed to be something clanking about in the house after one of my abductions, which I tried to ignore, and oddly enough so did 41, 40, the keepers, LS apart transport themselves or others, including, alas, me, quickly and efficiently, just like the transporter on Star Trek, only without dematerialization. This was also about the time that, despite my ragged state, I was beginning to perceive other strangeness, and I began formulating a theory, namely that these things, or creatures, may not be from another planet so much as from another dimension. I'd noticed that when I saw them in this world, they only seemed to be partly here. Also, I would see these visitors walking through walls. My dimension theory would explain this, since it would afford them the ability to work in our dimension, and yet be in theirs at the same time, a kind of phasing effect, if you will. Anyway, that's what I was starting to think, and future experience bore me out. This business with the dancing knickknacks in the house was the result of my interaction with the field. The more I got abducted, the stronger this residual effect got. The paranormal activity, I discovered later when I got involved with researchers and groups, happens to most abductees, as do precognitive activities, which I'll discuss later. So, on a Monday, I got a trip to school again, this time in midday. Another session with my schoolmasters certainly didn't help my mental state much, and I had to wait until Friday until I could meet with the pastor and the qualified guy he wanted me to meet. The emotional trauma affected my eating and my sleeping. I was losing weight and maybe getting 1 or 2 hours of sleep a night. I avoided my wife as much as possible. Teresa could tell I wasn't myself, and she asked me what was wrong. I told her I was just worried about business. We were both independent sorts, single-minded people. She had her projects, and I had mine. We required our own spaces, so it was natural for us to avoid each other from time to time. Therefore, Teresa seemed to accept my excuse. Thursday night before my meeting with my pastor, I fell into a deep sleep. At 3:30 a.m., that phosphorus ball showed 43, figure 8, OWL appears in my living room, Teresa. Now, though, my theory is that it's all involved with the kind of technology they use. Previously, I had thought that what I had been experiencing dancing knickknacks, etc., was odd poltergeist activity, but now before me, here in my own house, away from that Twilight Zone computer screen room, was physical evidence that something real was happening. I'm no rocket scientist, but I have enough education to deduce that all that was going on wasn't supernatural. It was science fiction writer Arthur C. Clarke who said, "Any sufficiently advanced technology will appear indistinguishable from magic." So if what we had here was advanced technology that involved magnetism, electricity and light, then perhaps I was feeling the after effects of whatever field they used. I've learned over time that they use this field for all sorts of purposes, invisibility for instance. They can render any form of matter invisible. They can 42, the keepers up again. I was so exhausted. I looked at it, knew it was time for school, and then I fell back to sleep. Acceleration. I guess they had to pry open my eyes this time. "Hello, assholes," I said. The voice said, "This is not pleasing to God." To God? I was incensed. "To God, you say? How dare you say that? Do you think for 1 minute you're going to trick me into thinking you have anything to do with God? I'll tell you what, turn me loose and I'll squeeze your big heads off your skinny little necks. So do it. Turn me loose. Because I can't hurt God, can I?" From the corner of my eye I could see two of the workers. They were staring at each other. They had no expression, of course, but I could tell they were stumped. That was the last time the voice presented itself as God, and I wondered if other prophets had heard the same thing. It seemed as though they'd try almost anything to weaken my will, in order to get my cooperation. What happened next didn't get my full cooperation, but it sure got my attention. We were moving along in that alien alphabet by now. I'd passed D with flying colors, so I figured that he was next. So we spent the first part of the session with me proving my skill with those first letters. I was tired and I needed that positive feeling of euphoria, and they gave it to me, whatever it was. I performed admirably. Instead of E, though, the number 1 appeared, then 2 and so on upward to the number 6. One cooperated, and traced out the symbols for each. Slowly I was becoming acquainted with their writing style, which made it faster and easier to learn. They stopped at the number 6, and then I said, "Okay. What about 7? "No," said the voice. "Life falls apart." "What do you mean, no? Our number system is based on the 6. That upset me for some reason. Maybe it was the resentment I'd stored, going through those numbers for them like a good little slave. "The hell with your base 6 number system. I like mine better." I drew out the number 7, my style. It disappeared from the screen. I traced it out again. It disappeared again, like a shaken etch-a-sketch. This happened over and over again, and I got a perverse sense of enjoyment. This was probably aggravating them. After a while I stopped writing the number 7, I shrugged and went back over the alien symbols for 1 through 6. "I did well." "Good," came on the screen, and the voice sounded it in my head as well. I got that pleasant rush of euphoric reward. Time to compete. Mild euphoria turned to anxiety. Compete with whom? Look. I was able to turn my head, so I looked around. To my right was a corridor, through which I could look into another room. I was so shocked by what I saw that I almost fainted. The room was a duplicate of mine, too, screens, everything. But, instead of me sitting on the stool, it was my wife, Teresa. She turned her head slowly and then stared straight through me, as though I weren't even there. "Time to compete. Go." Teresa turned her attention back to the screen. She started writing the complete alphabet on the screen, symbols I hadn't seen yet. She was fluid and fast, as though she'd been doing this for years. "Compete. Compete. 45, 44, the keepers, I can't keep up with this." It was such a heart-rending sight, seeing Teresa there. "Stop. Stop. Please stop. S-H-E's good, I-S-N-T-S-H-E. That's my wife. You bastards have my wife. S-H-E's not yours. S-H-E's ours. Always has been, always will be. Life falls apart, she doesn't belong to you or anyone. Teresa is my wife. No. S-H-E has always been ours." I cried out, "She's mine. That's my wife. Look." Straight ahead of me, 3 or 4 feet in the air, a scene appeared like a projected holographic movie. It was a hospital room. A child was being born. The scene faded into another scene, this one showing a 4 or 5 year old child sleeping in a bed. To my disbelief, I realized it was Teresa as a child. Then the next scene was Teresa as a teenager, making out with her first boyfriend. This was some sort of chronological representation of different periods of Teresa's life, right up to our marriage. Enough. That's enough. Now I understand. I don't like it, but I understand. You've been keeping track of her all her life. Me as well? Yes. Why? I asked. No response. When I asked again and still got no response, I said, "I hate you more than anything I've ever hated in my life. You have invaded me to my core being. From all I can tell, nothing is sacred to you. What a pathetic existence you endure. Sure, you have the technology, but you're like robots, empty and hollow. I'd like to kill you all." No response. "You don't have emotions. Do you? Answer me. Do you?" Nothing. Suddenly, I just felt empty. I almost felt sorry for them, and I almost apologized for my desire to kill them. In any case, they certainly were getting full value from this particular abductee. "Teresa," I said. "Teresa, is she okay?" They said nothing. They were as silent as the spaces between the stars. The terrible whirling of acceleration drew me back to an Earth life that was growing stranger than my alien schoolroom. 47. 1. The complete alien alphabet can be seen on page 230. 46. The devil or drugs work or still controlled by those beings somewhere in the Twilight Zone, maybe reading alien Dick and Jane books already. But there she was, my wife, still sleeping snugly in our bed, looking pretty and untroubled. And safe. Thank God she was safe. However, as soon as I got past my relief, I realized that what was before me was something rather odd. Usually Teresa is up every morning by 6:30 a.m. Calling her name didn't wake her. I shook her. What time is it? She mumbled. Past 10, dear. Are you okay? She nodded and blinked. I feel weak. I must be getting a cold or something. I'll call your work for you and tell them you're sick. I made us some coffee. It was time to talk. When I gave her the coffee the way she liked it, she seemed a little more awake. I told her I'd make her breakfast as well, if she wanted it, but we needed to talk first. Teresa. Who are those strange creatures that have been taking us away? Her brow furrowed as she sipped at her hot drink. What creatures, Jim? I looked away and thought for a moment. How should I deal with this? She had an evasiveness about her. I decided that I needed to be stern. You know what I'm talking about. Who are they, Teresa? You seem to have been around them a while. She still seemed a little addled, a little confused, and she said, What, you mean my helpers from heaven? Helpers from heaven? A whirlwind of thoughts flashed through my head. The creatures had tried to convince me they were from God, but at 49, chapter 6, The Devil or Drugs Home. I can see it now, the pretty Italian tile in the entryway, the oak railings, the high ceilings in the living room with sun windows, the fireplace, the large color TV and Teresa's excellent housekeeping. Even at the worst of times, she always made sure that our house was clean. I could tell by the softness of the couch below me, the aroma of last night's dinner in the air, and the familiar smell of the heating system that I was back on my couch. Nonetheless, I couldn't move. More than that, I was in some kind of haze. A timelessness hung over me, and I felt a drowsiness that I couldn't shake. All I could think of was seeing Teresa in that alien school. Was she all right? What did this mean? I was tortured by worry and doubt, all wrapped up in one great big ball of helplessness. I had awakened in the dark, and it seemed to take a very long time for light to come. In between I fell into some kind of glazed half-consciousness, filled with sluggish nightmares. When I finally was able to move, it was fully light. The clock claimed it was 10 in the morning. I couldn't believe that so much time had passed. I didn't waste my ability to move. I rolled off the couch and rushed through the hall to our bedroom, half expecting to find Teresa gone, either gone to 48. The keepers didn't work. However, they conned Teresa into thinking they were helpers from heaven. Then I thought back to days of old, to ancient man, thousands of years ago. The minds of that day, seeing everything religiously, would think the visitors were either from heaven or hell. Helpers from heaven was an odd name for them. But that phrase still rings in my ears, and I was so grateful. It meant that I wasn't alone. Moreover, I wasn't losing my sanity. I don't think they were helpers from heaven, Teresa. I'd say they were aliens. Don't you remember seeing me last night? No. She was suddenly alarmed, as though fully realizing who was talking to her. Her eyes flashed darkly as she stared up at me. We're not supposed to talk about it. Yet more relief. Here was someone that was acknowledging that yes, Jim, this hasn't been a warped dream. Everything that has been tearing your mind apart has really and truly been happening. On the other hand, this was a vital matter. We were not only husband and wife, we also shared this experience. Why shouldn't we talk about it? I desperately needed to discuss it. What do you mean? I urged. We're not allowed to discuss it. I shook my head. Even between us? Yes. Well, they sure never told me that. But then maybe they figured pretty quickly that it would be worthless. Maybe they even instructed me to discuss it with anyone and everyone. Come on. You just admitted we were both there in that place. You've seen them, I said, straining to get the words out. Please. I need to know what the hell is going on. She turned away from me. Her words turned cold. Don't ask me any more, because I won't talk about it. I implored her, to no avail. 50. The devil or drugs. Finally, I just threw up my hands and went off and tried to take care of myself. That one time was the only time that Teresa ever acknowledged our mutual experiences, but the fact that she refused to discuss it was almost a confirmation. The aliens had her intimidated, and I really can't blame her that much. We've all felt fear, some more than most, but can you imagine yourself experiencing these things with their slender unearthly fingers on your deepest instinctual triggers? No, I didn't blame Teresa, but I guess I wish we'd been a bit less independent and had the kind of bond that not even unfeeling creatures from beyond understanding could break. Despite Teresa's declared intention to follow party lines, I was determined not to. I was going to get to the bottom of this, no matter what the cost. Oh yes, and there was a cost most dear. After getting some breakfast for us, I sighed. Look, I said. I'm sorry you don't want to talk about it, but I asked the pastor to come over to counsel me about this. He's bringing someone he says might be qualified to help. I respect how you feel. But could you at least say something helpful? I mean, so that they won't cart me off to some institution. She nodded. I'll try. She had the kind of stony expression I recognized in her from 5 years of marriage, a look I'd see many times again. It was almost 11 a.m., the time when the pastor said he'd arrive. I didn't have time to shower or shave. So I just went into the bathroom to splash some water over my face and run a comb through my hair. I looked at myself in the bathroom mirror after doing what I could to fix my appearance. Staring back at me were puffy, red eyes peering out of a tired, pale face. My pants kept sliding down because of the weight I'd lost. The doorbell rang. It was the pastor. 51. The keeper's Reverend Ed is a short, stocky, strong, middle-aged man of German descent with blonde hair. He's gentle but strong. Beside him was a short middle-aged man with glasses whom the pastor just introduced as Dom. They both gave me firm, concerned handshakes. I did my best to get them refreshments, and then I sat down with them, feeling a little relieved to be able to get help, but also suddenly wondering if I'd called the right people. Tom looked stiff and uncomfortable, and he had the attitude of a man who had already made up his mind about what was in this universe and how things were supposed to run. Now, Tom, before we jump to any conclusions, let's let Jim share some details, said the pastor. I took a deep breath and jumped into my story. I gave them a 45-minute summary. I included the fact that I'd seen my wife on board the craft, or whatever it was. I mentioned my recent conclusion that she'd been influenced by these aliens for years, if not her entire life. Well, I held their interest. That was for sure. They seemed entranced, but when I finished my story, Tom said, without a doubt there is demonic activity taking place here. I completely agree, said the pastor, nodding gravely. The ways of the devil are confusing. The devil. I shook my head. I'm not talking pitchforks and barbed tails or horns. I'm not even talking evil. I'm discussing a possible starcraft. I'm talking about amazingly advanced technology. We are not in the Middle Ages. These aliens. The pastor sighed. I'm sorry, Jim. If this isn't satanic work. Well, then I'm afraid you must be taking some kind of drugs. Tom nodded smugly. In my experience, drugs and evil spirits are always linked. The devil or drugs. I almost wish this were so, fellows. But please believe me. These aren't devils. Look. I'll get Teresa. She's more religious than I am. Maybe she'll convince you. When Teresa came out, she looked at me in a funny way. She'd brushed her hair and put on her dressing gown. She gripped a Kleenex and still claimed she had a cold. I was telling the pastor about what happened last night, about the creatures who kidnapped me, and about you being there too, I said. She gave me a look of sorrow, then turned to the man who had married us. I have no idea what Jim is talking about. I felt devastated. I snatched at straws. Okay, Teresa. What about the people you call your helpers from heaven? She shook her head. I've never said anything like that, and I have no idea what you're talking about, Jim. Is Jim taking some kind of prescription drug or illegal substances?